Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Not-So-Lonely Planet, Italy, by Corina Kennedy. Narrated by Angela Daw. Chapter 1. How Not to Seduce a Man. Ristorante La Brezza, Positano, Italy. Tuesday, 11:26 p.m. The dynamic lesbian duo I meet on the train from Rome to Positano are full of wingwoman potential. I'm traveling alone, so the refined, blonde, Parisian one who reminds me of a beautiful wood nymph invites me to join them for dinner with her friends. Her saucy British girlfriend, more nympho than nymph, orders me to come. I accept, out of curiosity and fear of insulting the Brit, who was clearly Wicked Spice, a sixth girl kicked out of the group for bad behavior. Anyway, I didn't just come to Italy to research a book. I came to meet people and have adventures. This qualifies as both. Positano is a sleepy, gorgeous town near the Italian Riviera, and the warmly lit trattoria is right on the blue-green water. I have no idea he will be there. Dinner is eccellente. Dessert does not go as planned. If you are ever traveling on your own Italian lovecation, here are some things I learned. Hints for not being too American. 1. Espresso is to be enjoyed after dessert, not with. What are you, a hedonist? 2. Fragola and limoncello are digestive liqueurs, not shots. Trust me, you don't want to be cleaning your own strawberry lemon smoothie off the floor of your pensione bathroom at 2 a.m. 3. Italians don't do doggy bags. Even if they were the best meatballs you ever had in your life, don't try to put the last 3 in your purse. The meal is finishing up. At this point, if you've been playing footsies with the sexy photographer across from you, only to realize it's actually the female Alitalia pilot, or the leg of the table, you should start the Escheresque climb of steps back to your pensione. Do not do what I do now. I take a slow look around the table so it doesn't seem like I'm looking at him. I know him. He's a certain half-French, half-Italian photographer from the Roman Fountain last week. The cocky, handsome stranger had pissed me off, and I'd taken the high road instead of a ride in his sports car. Since that day, I'd distracted myself pretty fantastically, but Frantonio, I decided to call him this since I never got his name, kept slipping back into my mind. Tonight, when we were introduced, we both pretended not to recognize each other. Now, he sips espresso, listening to his friend talk about football while staring at me. Is it hot in here? When we met in Rome, he had the upper hand. I decide now that tonight will be different. Seduction is a fine art to be practiced by masters. Rembrandt, Degas, Renoir. Me? I'm more of a Pollock. It's definitely hot in here. I fill my glass with ice from the Prosecco bucket, lift my hair and roll the glass gently against my neck, willing him to watch me. How sexy is this? Unfortunately, I've forgotten the bright red Luscious Passion lipstick on my glass, and I now have red smears on my neck, as if I've been recently strangled. Sadly, I am unaware of this. Seeing that I've got his attention, I shift my weight so the neck of my dress drapes open enough for the lace of my bra to show. Glancing down, I then remember my one sexy bra had smelled like a gladiator in the Colosseum after he'd been beaten and buried for thousands of years. Tonight I've worn my sensible, once white, now gray and fraying, Target bra. I quickly sit up straight again, or at least what I think is straight. The pictures on the wall opposite all slope downhill, as if I'm on a cruise ship. I'm sure it has nothing to do with all the wine I've had. I know he recognizes me also. How could he not? It was only a brief encounter, but I remembered every inch of him. I allow my eyes to wander over his nicely shaped forearms, his dirty blonde, perfectly ruffled hair, the graceful arc of his collarbone, his strong jawline peppered with stubble, and the firm curve of his lip. But what's been creeping into my dreams are those eyes, framed by his glasses, deep brown with hints of gold and playful curling lashes. He is gorgeous. Here's a second chance to see what's behind door number 1. It's now or never. I rise slowly. I'm not a person who passes up risky potential for a safe bet. As I walk toward the hall that leads to the bathroom, I throw Frantonio a sexy smile. Andiamo. Let's go. If you've made it this far, follow these instructions. 1. Quick pee and hand wash. 2. Cleavage hike. 3. Breath check. 4. Pit sniff and pit wipe. 5. In the hall, drape yourself against the wall and channel your best Jessica. Beale, Alba, Simpson. For me, it's Rabbit. 6. Wait. Do not reapply previously mentioned Luscious Passion red lipstick. Back hallway. Ristorante La Brezza, Positano, Italy. Tuesday, 11:45 p.m. I don't have to pretend to check my phone too long before I hear footsteps.
Waiting for someone, chérie?
His accent is a musical mashup of nationalities. My phone isn't working. I lie.
We meet again.
He smiles.
A force of nature pulls us together, peut-être.
Yes, we both had to pee, I say coolly.
Very funny. Come now, you can't deny there is some kind of magnetism.
I think that's called lust.
Well, une rose porte tout autre nom.
He laughs. Why does everything sound sexier in French? I ask.
Because it's the most powerful language in the world.
He winks.
First Rome, now here. Surely you can feel the energy between us even now.
He smiles. I wet my finger, hold it up, like a sailor testing for wind. Not really getting anything, I say with a straight face. This coolness with men was taught by my mother, who'd been abandoned by my father. It was reinforced by my Catholic school nuns, and finally perfected out of self-preservation as a nerdy teen who hid behind romance books and took teasing to heart. Later in college, I slowly began to grasp my own natural sex appeal and use this coolness as an ambush instead of a barrier. Now it takes all my self-control to act indifferent when Frantonio takes my finger and puts it into his own mouth. This is definitely gross, yet somehow sexy at the same time, and I immediately imagine how his tongue and lips would feel elsewhere on my body.
Adesso?
He asks.
Now can you feel it?
He takes a step closer to me. Is it like a woozy, sloshy feeling? Because I'm definitely getting that. I thought it was the wine and that very rich sauce on my meatballs. I trail off as he leans in even closer. I can feel the heat from his body. He reaches out and fingers the tiny star I wear on a delicate chain around my neck. This was made in high school from one of my father's bowling trophies after I found his soldering iron and started permanently sticking things together in his office, my revenge for his extended absences. I wear it because it reminds me to look up, aim high, and navigate with confidence. Right now, with my heart thumping like an overloaded washing machine, I'm faking every ounce of confidence. Frantonio slides his hand behind my back and pulls me toward him. His other hand brushes my hair from my shoulder as his warm breath and stubble tickle my neck, sending an uncontrollable shiver down my legs. He kisses me, first lightly, and then harder. I kiss him back and run my fingers through his perfectly ruffled hair. At this point, you should step back, blush beautifully, let him ask you out. I do not. My Jessica Rabbit morphs into Sharon Stone as I lean my head back for him to kiss my neck and then arch my chest up so that he can bend down to kiss my breasts. I slip my hand into his shirt between the buttons as I slide one knee up his leg. Here, my other foot suddenly slips on the travertine marble, sending my thigh smashing into his crotch as I fall to the floor, my arm still caught in his shirt, ripping it open like the Incredible Hulk. My ass on the cold tile, I watch Frantonio lean against the wall, moaning in pain, glasses askew, luscious passion smeared down his chin and chest, swearing in both French and Italian. Fuck. Right now you're thinking I wouldn't fall. Probably not, but I'm the klutziest person I know, with the exception of my mother. More on this later. Quickly, if not gracefully, I scramble to my feet, run through the kitchen, smash into a guy hauling garbage, and escape through the back with spaghetti on my arm. I don't stop until I'm crawling up the last of the 18 flights of steps to my pensione at the top of the hill. It is here that I realize the designer purse that turns into a clutch my friend Sarah gave me is no longer clutching anything. It's come open somewhere along the way, and now everything is gone, including my room key. Fortunately, I've left my window open. Unfortunately, my room is on the second floor. If you find yourself in this situation, definitely do not 1. Cry. 2. Vomit outside your neighbor's window. 3. Attempt to climb a 30-year-old rose trellis. 4. Fall, ripping your dress open. 5. Tell the old man who runs the place you thought there was a fire. 6. Silently freak out like a coked-up mime because you lost your wallet and phone. 7. Forget you're dripping with sweat and your mascara looks like Courtney Love's. 8. Get out your tablet and video call your best friend, who is also your ex, and still in love with you. Introduction. You're probably thinking, introductions go at the beginnings of books, not after the first chapter. You're right, but you would have skipped it. We all do. I think it's best if we're properly introduced before you see me with my pants down. My mother is a fish. It's a line from As I Lay Dying, one of my favorite books, and also what my father told me on one of our little fishing trips. I hated fishing, but Dad was a chartered yacht captain who sailed off for weeks, so I took any time I could get. He said he'd fallen in love with a mermaid long ago on one of his journeys. They'd lived together on a beautiful island in the South Pacific and had a baby. But fish are not like people. They don't mate for life. One day, she swam away, leaving him with me. When my father returned to Key West, Rosalie, the innkeeper's daughter, took pity on us and invited us to live with her. She and my father eventually married. Of course, this was all a silly story. Probably. It's just always been hard for me to reconcile how two people as different as my parents got together. Dad's traveled the world, and Rosalie's never even left the country. Also, I'm probably more like a mermaid than I am like my mother. Also, I love the water. Being in it, on it, around it. Like me, fish don't swim in a straight line. They're impossible to hold on to. The tighter you grasp them, the more likely they are to slip into the sea and disappear forever. Rosalie never understood this. Each time my father came home from a voyage, she would try to hold on tighter and keep him from leaving. But he always did. During those longer and longer trips, she would then grip me more tightly. This made me want to swim away, too. My name is Nativity Marina Taylor. Rosalie wanted something biblical, and Dad liked nautical. Despite my Sunday school and Catholic school education, Jesus and I are still figuring out our complicated relationship. When I was 9, I stopped answering to Nativity and claimed Marina. I grew up in a place other people escaped to, but I wanted to escape from. Florida is the country's fun, sticky, dangly part that should be kept in its pants. Swamps and beaches, guns, drugs, gators, theme parks, tourists, retirees, rednecks, politicians, immigrants, millionaires, and homeless people. It's a schizophrenic tropical paradise where heat madness is a valid legal defense. A good thing to remember when you move back in with your mother after college. I feel like Rosalie and I are polar opposites. She watches every flavor of CSI while quilting things to raise money for charity. I watch raunchy comedies and adventure romance films for the cute meats and the sex scenes. I never bother with the endings, they're all the same. Mostly, Rosalie and I do not enjoy each other's company. But we do have one thing in common. My father abandoned us. So, up to this point, we've been stuck together like barnacles. But now I've got a get-out-of-jail-free card. My friend Mike, who works for an airline, has given me a buddy pass, a super cheap, open-ended ticket to Europe. I feel like Charlie with his golden ticket to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Not so long ago, a woman traveling alone was seen to be of questionable moral character. But you've read the first few pages of this book, so any questions about my moral character have already been answered. I am a writer and a restless spirit. Remember Choose Your Own Adventure books? At the end of each chapter, you're given a choice. Depending on your choice, you turn to a certain page, read, make another choice, etc. I loved and hated those books. I kept my fingers stuck in different places so I could look at all the options, change my mind, choose again. Who wants only one adventure? My plan has always been to save up money after college and go abroad to research my first book. I'm taking a creative nonfiction essay I wrote as an English major and expanding it into a book. This will be a noble contribution to the world of literature. Never mind that I grew up reading more adventure romance novels than noble contributions to the world of literature. And never mind the real reason I want to go to Europe is to have exotic lovers and awesome adventures, the point is, now I can go. As an intrepid explorer, I am unwilling to miss out on a memory, willing to bend the rules, unafraid of my own beauty, and ready to share it with those who deserve it. Men get to roam the world with London, Kerouac, and Larry McMurtry, have gun, will travel. Women get to stay home with Austin? Fuck that. Have pen and pussy, will travel. I want to date like a man, unapologetically. Confidence must be faked until it is found. Openness must be practiced until it eclipses ego. The book you're about to read is not the one I traveled to Italy to write. Yes, I planned to write about admirable women to inspire other women. Here's the problem. Every good story needs drama and conflict. Enter me, B-side to admirable women everywhere. So, this is a travel diary for romantic readers, with notes on inspirational women and the misadventures of a not-so-inspirational one. This time, we'll start at the beginning. Warning! This book may be unsuitable for children, my mother, judgy Catholic school friends, Italian greyhounds, they already shake too much, and bold young ladies with poor judgment, like me, who think things like naked bungee jumping or moonlight surfing sound fun. Chapter 2. How Not to Say Goodbye. Harbor House B&B, Wednesday, 3:23 p.m. My plane to Rome leaves tomorrow at 1:45 p.m., and the following night, I'll be at an exclusive wine release party. As soon as I posted on social media about my upcoming trip, my friend Nadia, an Italian sommelier I'd met in Miami, invited me. My version of good wine is whatever's on sale at Costco, and I have no idea what a release party is, but exclusive is definitely in my vocabulary. My plane leaves in less than 24 hours, so of course, instead of packing, I'm outside cleaning fish. Many of you won't know the special stinky hell of 103-degree heat with 89% humidity while scraping off scales and skin, cutting off tails and yanking out bones and guts, all while haunting eyes give you a death stare. But my family owns a bed and breakfast, and paying guests don't clean their own fish. This has been my job since my father left. I do not eat fish. I'm part fish, after all. Sadly, the poetic tragedy of forcing me to scrape the flesh off my brethren has always failed to move Rosalie. As I mop sweat from my brow, smearing fish guts on my forehead, my phone buzzes in my pocket. I pull it out, with slimy hands, and check the message. Will.
When do you leave?
Me. Not soon enough. Will.
I have something for your trip.
Me. I'm already packed. Will.
Won't take much space.
I'm not actually packed. I start to answer him, but at this moment, a devious seagull with whom I have a checkered past goes for one of the fish fillets. Was that bastard bird sitting there waiting for me to clean a fish for him? As I dive forward, flailing my arms to block him, my phone flies out of my slippery, slimy hand, into the air, hits the wooden deck, and skitters over the edge into the water. Fuck. What to pack for your Italian lovecation. 1. Old cell phone that was supposed to be your backup phone. 1. 2. Cute sundress. 1-2. 3. LBD, little black dress, for wine release party and other fancy events. 1-2. 4. Comfortable sandals or flip-flops. 1-2. And ridiculously uncomfortable stilettos. 1. 5. Comfortable underwear, 6, and uncomfortable sexy lingerie, 1. 6. Bathing suit that shows off your ass sets, 1. 7. Sarong to cover up your ass sets, 1. 8. Birth control pills and condoms. Can't be too careful. My boat on stilts, Harbor House B&B, Wednesday, 11:15 p.m. The 26-foot sloop my father never got around to fixing has been my bedroom since I tried to run away at age 14. Rosalie and I compromised, and I got my own space. The obvious irony of living on a boat up on stilts in my mother's backyard that was never going anywhere ever again never occurred to me. At this point, if it's almost midnight on the night before your first adventure abroad, and you're still lying in bed awake, you probably shouldn't have had that double espresso. And latte. And cappuccino. Rosalie's new machine for the B&B needed testing. You should do a mental autopsy of your luggage. The dinner purse you packed is too big. You can't use it for dinner. Instead, pack the purse that turns into a clutch that Sarah gave you. That one is beautiful and functional. You won't be sorry. Remove the stilettos. They'll get stuck in the cobblestones. Get out of your bunk. Open your new Swiss Army suitcase with a super strong zipper, guaranteed for life. Switch the purses. Sit on your suitcase and zip it back up. Do not accidentally zip the bottom of the oversized t-shirt you're wearing into your suitcase, jamming the super strong zipper, guaranteed for life, so you have to crawl over to the table, dragging the bag behind, break your letter opener in the super strong zipper, grab the scissors, and chop the end of your shirt off, along with the part of your knee that was bracing the bag. My boat on stilts. Harbor House B&B. Thursday, 2:08 a.m. I'm lying in my little berth bed, still awake. Ice pack on my newly bandaged knee, listening to the rain outside. Suddenly I jump. Something hit the deck above me. I stand up and slowly poke my head out of the hatch. Rain pelts the deck. To my relief, the raccoon that's been harassing me for weeks by knocking rocks against the deck until I toss cookies out the hatch is nowhere in sight. I know this sounds cute, but this fierce trash panda is actually a pirate. He limps, is missing one eye, and breaks into my boat to eat my tropical fish. He's not cute, he's a dick. I lie back down. But then...
Marina?
A voice calls from below. I slide the small curtain back and look down. There, standing in the rain, is my sweet, sexy, soggy ex-boyfriend. What's he doing here? I throw on a raincoat. What the hell, Will? It's the middle of the night, I call down.
Sorry, I said I had something for you.
He holds up a book in a Ziploc bag. You drove all the way from Miami in a storm to give me a book?
Yeah, you need it for your trip.
Bullshit, Will. The only thing you're missing is a boombox and a trench coat. Will's always been the hopeless romantic, waiting patiently for his movie ending. I, on the other hand, know there is no happily ever after. You must find your own happy. Over and over again.
What happened to your leg, Marina?
He asks. I look down. The rain washes blood from my knee down my leg.
You're always bleeding.
Will, you're the one who said only messages and emails after we broke up.
I know. Just come down, please,
he says. I pitch the rope ladder over the side and climb down. Water drips off the brim of the straw cowboy hat he's worn for years. The guys on the police force tease him, but Will's not the sort that cares. He grew up near Ocala, looking after a ranch full of cattle. Now he works as a cop in Key West, looking after an island full of misfits. I try not to notice that his favorite blue shirt is soaked and now plastered to his well-sculpted breakup bod. Will, you can't stop me. I have a cheap ticket to Europe, an invitation to an exclusive wine release party, a book to research, and a mother who's driving me crazy. I can't stay here cleaning fish and making key lime pies for other people who left home to explore new places. I have to get the fuck out of this boat, out of this town, and out of this state.
I know, Marina. You got ants in your pants.
He always said that. I used to say, and you're jealous of those ants. But tonight, I do not.
Besides, how can you be a great writer if you never have any worldly experiences?
Exactly, I say, surprised and disarmed. There's an awkward moment, filled with only the sound of the warm rain around us. I stare at my toes, wiggling them in the mud.
Have you read this?
He hands me the book. The Alchemist? No.
Okay, good.
Thanks. We both stand there, silent again. It's been months since we broke up, but then there was that one last time on his sailboat during the fireworks on the 4th of July. Now, as he leans in to hug me goodbye, I smell the sweet, earthy scent of his rain-soaked hair, and I flash back to that night. The silhouette of his perfectly shaped nose was lit by soft, distant flashes of light as he had leaned in to kiss me. The boat had gently swayed, pressing our bodies together. The cool, salt breeze had tickled the glass mermaid wind chime as the stubble of his day-old beard tickled my neck, sending goosebumps racing down my arms and chest. I could feel his heart racing, pounding against my wet t-shirt as I gripped his hair and kissed him hungrily. I could never get enough of those strong, confident kisses. I could kiss this man for hours. Our bodies had swayed rhythmically with the boat. It was like we were dancing, although I never danced to slow songs. His hands had cupped my ass, pulling me into him, tighter, closer. As I felt him harden, for me, my desperate fingers had tugged at the strings of his board shorts as my forehead pressed against his abs. He'd lifted me easily up onto the cabin bunk and peeled off my wet t-shirt. The fireworks had flashed from afar, illuminating his beautiful face as he'd smiled and untied the string on my bikini, his gentle, strong hands on my breasts, his thumb stroking my nipple.
You're getting all wet.
Will's voice breaks through my memory. No shit. Here, now, in the dark and the warm rain, I want him so badly. But I simply lean in and kiss his cheek. He hugs me tightly. It feels good. Too good, even though rainwater pours off his hat into my hood and down my back. I peel myself out of his arms. I have to. We want different things. Bye, cowboy.
Have fun, mermaid,
he says.
But not too much fun.
I get a glimpse of his one slightly crooked tooth that only shows when he smiles. Will gets into his old Bronco and drives away. Back in my boat, I reopen my new Swiss Army suitcase with a super strong zipper, guaranteed for life, and stuff in the book. Then, to counteract the weight of old relationships with the prospect of new ones, I also cram back in the ridiculously uncomfortable stilettos. Chapter 3. How Not to Fly. My Boat on Stilts, Harbor House B&B, Thursday, 6:49 a.m.
Marina!
My mother's voice slices into my Ryan Gosling dream like a buzzsaw, but it's actually a relief. Moments ago, I'd been waiting patiently in the extra-large, first-class plane bathroom, stripped down to my purple La Perla lingerie, waiting for Ryan to induct me into the Mile High Club. But then my dream had taken a sharp nosedive. Ryan bashed the door open from the outside, brandishing a gun and his U.S. Marshal's badge, seizing my oversized bottle of perfume.
"It's over 3 ounces! Everybody get down!"
Screams of horror as passengers assumed the crash position.
"Marina! Get up now if you want a ride. I need help with breakfast, and we have to drop some guests at the Hemingway House on the way to the airport shuttle."
A radio squawks by my head. It's a system we rigged up so Rosalie could communicate with me from the main house at any time. Biggest mistake I ever made. I blink at the clock. Shit. Kitchen, Harbor House B&B, Thursday, 7:12 a.m.
"You've already read that crap to me once, Rosalie."
I fry the bacon as she, again, reads me the State Department's webpage of safety precautions for citizens traveling abroad.
"They update it daily. You can't be too careful. Don't call me that. Know before you go."
She problematically reminds me that I've chosen a country with, quote, gypsies and gigolos everywhere, end quote. "Why do you think I picked it?" I reply. I know her real beef with gypsies is that my father insisted on naming their Romanian gypsy friend my official godfather instead of her brother. Rosalie never quite understood Dad's fascination with this resourceful nomadic culture. I, on the other hand, loved visiting their cigar-scented home with sparkling crystal chandeliers, plastic-covered furniture, and neon palm reader signs blinking proudly. As I said before, Rosalie isn't the wandering type. The fact that she's never been out of the country doesn't seem to bother her at all. I flip the bacon. "Stop worrying. We'll video chat weekly, if you can remember how to use the app I downloaded onto your not-so-smartphone." She reaches over me to get her coffee, and her arm grazes the sizzling frying pan.
"Oh!"
She winces, drawing back quickly. I immediately examine it, and yanking a bag of frozen peas out of the freezer, sit her down with her mug of coffee. Rosalie is prone to accidents causing herself bodily injury. Okay, we have two things in common.
"Relax. I'm the one that's leaving the country, Rosalie."
I said don't call me that. She hates this, which is why I do it.
"How long will you be gone?"
she asks, her voice pained, but it's not her arm that's bothering her.
"Until my money runs out or I get arrested, whichever comes first," I joke.
She doesn't smile.
"I'll be fine. I've got Dad's survivalist instincts."
At the mention of my father, she bristles. "That's what I'm afraid of." She looks away, annoyed and trying not to let me see her nervous tears welling up. I know what's worth.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?